Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
Originally from the Afrikaans, this Dutch word is a compound of support pole and tree or beam. Once you smash the syllables together, though, it means the main haulage shaft of a wagon or cart. And if any travelers have broken theirs, come on down. We have a spare Disselboom here in the Doom Room. I'm Alex, and I'm doomed.
If Alex keeps talking in his Jeopardy voice, he's going to start a baby boom. Boom, boom, we're in the Doom Room. I'm Justin, and I'm doomed.
I'm Pete. And did you say the Afrikaans? What are you trying? What was that?
Yeah, from the language, Afrikaans. They speak it in South Africa and a couple of other places, right?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
But you truly sound like when they go to the Audio Daily Double and some random person reads it. That's you.
That's what I'm
could
gunning
be
for.
You.
Literally, the only reason I'm doing this podcast is
that's
to
where the big bucks
read
are.
The Double Jeopardy. We're in Triple Jeopardy, though, because we moved into Season 3 of Doom Patrol, Episode 7, Bird Patrol. If it's been a while since you watched this episode, a bit of a spoiler warning here, but things are really coming to a head with the Sisterhood of Dada. While Rita is back in time, we find out kind of what the eternal flagellation is, but it begins in the present. Laura gets her memory back, realizes that, as we heavily speculated, she was the one that betrayed the Sisterhood of Dada and locked them up for years, turning them into weapons for the Bureau of Normalcy. Meanwhile, in the present, though, the rest of the Doom Patrol is going through their own things. Larry barfs up a giant maggot and ends up taking care of it most of the episode. Jane is dealing with the fallout of helping Kay steal a bike that leads to some big, big showdowns with the rest of the underground. And meanwhile, Cliff is trying to babysit, and it goes predictably, not horribly wrong, but pretty wrong.
Medium
horribly
wrong.
Cyborg,
he's bad at everything.
Yes.
Cliff.
And Cyborg, last but not least, is getting fitted for some human skin and calls none other than Ronnie. She's finally back, though, clearly Skyping in from some other show or something like that. I don't know
exactly.
But yeah, there you go. Lots of stuff going on. Overall, though, given all these revelations here, now that we know what's going on with Laura, now that Rita has looped back to the present, how are you feeling about how we're moving forward with the Sisterhood of Dada storyline?
I'm starting to think my theory is getting a little dicey, you know?
Oh, about Laura and Rita being the same person?
It's starting to feel like a little bit of a long
I think
shot.
In this app, that kind of blows up.
Still three more episodes. Anything could happen.
That's right.
This show is insane.
Anything can happen in this show.
What are you going to do if in the last episode they're like, oh, by the way, Laura, you're also Cyborg?
I was so close. JT wins again.
Almost there.
Let me throw out, this episode was especially triggering because the Sisterhood of the Dada has big sketch group that doesn't like each other anymore but is still performing energy. I was like, I've been in this group. When Rita and Malcolm are sort of performing and everyone else is like, this is stupid. I should be in charge of the sketch group. We have to do my funny idea. It was theater kid, improv group. They are kept in a basement. It's the UCB theater. Basically,
and there's one member of the group who's like, I got a paying job, guys. I got to go do this. I can't do this comedy stuff anymore.
Yeah. There's a couple that's too cute, and then their work suffers because they're dating. Yeah.
There's a man with a bird in his chest. I had one of those in my sketch comedy group.
I got to say, though, speaking of triggering, like those giant face birds at the end, that was I've had nightmares like that, and it's not cool, man.
For someone who likes to back up the truck so much, you certainly drive to the end of the episode very quickly when we're talking about this.
Sorry, well, you were saying triggering moments, and I was like, I was like, oh no, not this in television form.
I would say overall, I like this episode. One of the things that I liked about it is they really got to it relatively quickly with the Sisterhood of Dada after last episode. Yeah. And Pete, don't jump on me. I'm just saying they took their time last week's episode, really getting into it and delving into 1917. Here, all the stuff that I expected last week, they sped through here. And I appreciated that, that obviously there's a lot more to come with the Eternal Flagellation, but just particularly the weirdness towards the end of the episode with the birds, with the bird attack, Laura escaping, everybody disappearing. It's a lot of stuff happening at the same time, but that's the sort of quickness and wildness I expect from this show, and I liked it.
I agree. The idea that Rita went back to 1917, lived for 32 years in the Bureau of Normalcy till 1949, and then lived on another life in the same world as the Rita at Doom Manor is wild. That's a wild bit of continuity they've established here. It was really exciting when she pulls the mask off and is under the Malcolm mask, and we see her in the present day.
The old Scooby-Doo move.
Scooby-Doom!
Wait, let me just back
save
up
for the next episode for the intro.
And address Alex's shot at the show a little bit here. Yes, what's nice about the show is sometimes they will move, quote unquote, faster for people. And sometimes they do take a little bit to kind of have character moments and explore different kind of characters, worlds, and what they're sitting in and what they're struggling with. So regardless of the speed being good enough for you, I'm glad that you enjoyed yourself in this episode.
Thanks, Pete. Addressing
and, I'm sorry that I was so harsh on the episode. I apologize about that.
Yeah, thank you. You're all right. That's good. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Pete, you sometimes you're on Alex for talking shit about this episode. You do almost nothing but talk shit about Niles and other aspects of
the show. Niles deserves it. That guy's dead for a reason.
Yes, he is dead for a reason. You're absolutely correct, Pete. Why don't we not get into this? I feel like we're going to get caught in a little bit of a quagmire here. Couple of things I wanted to say about the Rita stuff is, first of all, just again, jumping to the end of the episode, she still doesn't have her memory back, right? So, like, she knows Laura, she knows the sister of Dada, but even though the Doom Patrol recognizes her, she doesn't know that.
Yeah, because the Doom Patrol feels like they're just witnesses or sort of the audience for this big art project that the Sisterhood has been working on. And the only reason it connects is that they know Rita. And you see the shock on their face in the same way that we have it, where it's like, what has she become? Why is she with them? She's trying to destroy the world, it seems. And then throughout the episode, Jane sort of covers it. She's like, we no matter what we do, bad shit happens to us, so we're just gonna keep floating around here until it's over.
Yeah, that was a funny kind of moment where it was like, Jane was like, I don't know if you've been paying attention at all, but like, we don't do stuff happens to us, so we just kind of we don't have to really go anywhere, which was interesting kind of thing, especially coming from.
I love that. The other thing that I wanted to mention about the Rita of it all is, Justin, you kind of walk through the history of she's lived this lifetime and then she lives another lifetime. It's still messing me up how old everybody is on this show without changing at all. And I understand that, like, I don't need them in old age makeup or anything like that. But the fact that Rita is, I don't know, conservatively 200 years old or something at this point is wild.
Well, and plus, even the Sisterhood of Dada, they haven't aged oddly either. And that's just unreferenced. At least they did a whole thing about Rita not aging, and that was because of why Niles chose her to be part of the Doom Patrol and whatnot. They're just unreferenced, like, yeah, they're still the same. And they made this egg butterfly face birds to fly around here. I love the confidence to just roll into that.
What do you think the deal with that is in particular? Well, again, we're just going to kind of stick with the end of the episode, I guess. But what do you think the deal is with the face birds? Is there more to the Eternal Flagellation? Is this resurrecting Malcolm, or is it just paying tribute to him?
It felt like they really wanted Laura to open the door to the birdcage, and she didn't. Rita got mad and just did it and released it. So it's hard to tell. It feels like they wanted revenge on Laura, and now they've unleashed it on the world and teleported, seems like, the Doom Patrol to somewhere strange. The next episode's called Subconscious Patrol. So maybe it's
peeking ahead. Look at you.
it just started playing. So maybe they going to go into themselves, a classic Doom Patrol thing, and have to atone for their sins. The eternal flagellation feels like that's what that would be.
And I'm glad it wasn't flatulation, because when I first heard that, I was like, there's a lot of butts, and now we're going to have farting, and I don't know. Like, this seems insane.
You are Chekhov's Cliff. Butthole. Chekhov's butthole. You are Cliff. I think there's going to be, let me predict, there will be a fart next episode.
Yeah. Really?
Maybe that's how it ends. Maybe the donkey comes back and Cliff's like, it was an eternal flatulation. And everybody laughs and high fives, and that's the end of the show.
The show.
Oh, yeah.
It would be crazy if it ended with two episodes left.
I don't know, man. COVID's done wild things to TV. That's all I'm saying. Why don't we jump back rather than talking about more about the end of the episode, though? I'm sure we'll loop back there and talk about everybody's individual storyline since we just referenced him. Let's start with Cliff, who is clearly not over the whole Parkinson's thing, despite what he's saying. He is trying to take care of the baby. It's wild to me. This is such a specific thing to book out, but it's wild to me that Clara and her wife leave the baby with Cliff just to walk around the block and get ice cream. They're like, here's the credit card in case there's emergencies. I don't know. That was a little contrived for me, I'm just saying.
Okay. Well, that's the, you know, the flying faces and zombie butts don't bother you, but leaving someone with a credit card in case they need something is, really far-fetched.
Honestly, it's the riskiest thing that happened in this episode. Leaving Cliff with a credit card? Well, he sold records.
He sold.
That was heartbreaking. All right.
Jane's records. He sold her memorabilia. And then he uses the credit card to get Ginger back at the end. Sadly, he never gets to see Ginger's hoo-ha, which is a real bummer. I feel like that's Chekhov's hoo-ha right there.
We got a lot of Chekhov here.
We're definitely a lot of Chekhov. A lot.
Theater kids. Cliff, this episode he's just bad at everything all the time. And we haven't seen him be like a hero in how long? A little bit in season one, but he's just like a mess all the time.
Yeah, I do wonder what's going to happen in these last couple of episodes, to your point, because he does seem to be kind of just wandering along and letting everything kind of just take him as he goes. Part of that is, I think, his overall panic over the potentially having Parkinson's, and that's what's making him spiral, let alone the fact that he's taking all these pills nonstop, which is obviously exacerbating it. But yeah, I think more than the others, Jane's taking proactive steps, Cyborg is taking proactive steps, Rita sans her memory is taking proactive steps, and even Larry taking care of that gross parasite maggot thing is taking proactive steps. But Cliff is the one who's very much stuck in stasis and only getting worse right now.
Yeah, totally agree.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. Still fun to watch him try to turn off the fire alarm by breaking it. That was a fun little bit. Yeah.
It was just too stressful for me to see Cliff. He failed so hard in the last episode. I was proud of him for telling Jane the truth. And it was hilarious that he got banished from the house because of the Cher workout tapes, which, of course, we all know is collectibles and worth a ton of cash.
Mm-hmm. And then just more is sentimental value. Yeah.
Mint condition, Pete?
I mean, I'm not going to, I don't want people coming after me for those tapes. Yeah. So I'm not.
I don't want to mention anything. I don't want people coming after you either, but you have the Sunny workout tapes as well, right?
Got to watch them together.
When Angel and Buffy on DVD, when they'd have those crossovers, you got to flip out one DVD, put in the next DVD. Same thing with the Sunny and Cher tapes.
I love workout continuity, like when the two trainers come together that way.
It sucks to see Cliff fail so hard back to back like this. I was hoping for at least a little bit of a win, but I was super proud of him for not spending his daughter's money. So at least I had that.
Well, he paid his cam girl with her money.
Wait.
Yeah, he paid Ginger with the money.
Oh, no. Fuck, I didn't realize that.
You were so proud.
Oh, damn it.
Why don't we move on to somebody who I loved this episode. Larry Gross storyline, but so great, so funny. The lines in particular for Larry in this episode killed me. The whole barfing the giant maggot thing, obviously very gross, but the exchange, I'm trying to find it here, just that whole scene where Laura is trying to question him about it and sort of prod him in the right direction.
He's like, out of my mouth.
Yes. So the stuff that I wrote down, first of all, Laura yelling at him for being asleep at 11 a.m. and being like, come on, get up, get off of the floor. Very funny. But then asking, have you been anywhere weird recently? And he says, I went to Costco for the first time 2 weeks ago.
That's great. Great joke. Line. That's just a great one-liner.
So funny. And then the follow-up of her saying, when one expels a living 16-pound parasite, there's really only one thing to do. And then Larry takes a pause and says, give it a name? And then her reaction back, oh, Jesus Christ, you burn it. No, what are you doing? What are you doing? And her wandering away and the sound getting lighter as she goes. Perfect. Perfection on that scene.
Yeah, I agree. It's funny, these last few episodes, it feels like we're rotating which character gets, like, the banger lines. And today it's LT. I love it.
I mean, what do you guys feel about that? Because it glowed, so I was like, you can't burn it. I thought it was, you know, maybe another kind of, like, space entity. So I was glad to see him not burn it. But what do you guys, are you guys Team Laura there? If you give birth to a kind of gross-looking bug like that, are you going to kill it immediately or burn it?
No, I let them hang around for a little while, see what kind of bug they are.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, I usually keep a couple of maggots around just in case I need to learn some lessons.
Yeah. You ever barf 100 mosquitoes? It's especially bad in winter.
Yeah, no, that is really bad. I was going to offer up something. I'm hesitating here because I know last episode Pete says he doesn't want to know anything from the behind the episode stuff, but I thought,
do not want
to. Well, hold on, but I think like this is relevant because it was Matt Bomer talking about this specific storyline, and I guess like I didn't exactly pick up on it, but it totally makes sense. What he was saying about what this is the negative spirit giving him what he needs, even if it's not what he knows what he needs. And in this case, he's just rejected his son, Paul. So now he's getting something else from infancy that he has to learn how to take care of.
Yeah.
Because I mean, raising all of that. Yeah.
Raising a human child.
Remember when you were like, hey, I'm hesitant to spoil something? You should listen to that. I wanted to find out with the show what that was.
This is what they're giving you.
You just told me what was going to happen.
Here's the thing. I haven't seen
that. Happened
ahead,
in
right?
this episode.
That happened in That's this episode. Yeah, it's not a spoiler. You watched it.
Yeah, but I didn't know.
The thing that's good about the Doom Patrol is they don't feed you this stuff. They show it to you and let you pick up it or not. They barf it out their mouths. But it's up to you if you want to pick through that barf to see what they ate last night.
Oh, my God.
You know, and I just want to say, spoiler, Pete, I'm going to keep talking about my opinions on this episode for the rest of this podcast.
Okay, great. I'll allow it.
Every conversation is a spoiler when you think about it.
Big spoiler, we're all going to die someday. The Larry stuff is great. I also love the scene later on in the woods when he's leaving it and he just can't leave it and gives it a sandwich, then some hot coffee, and he wraps it up. Very cute, very fun, very excited to see what happens there. Why don't we talk about Jane, because that's another one that's running through the episode. There was a very weird scene in the middle here that, again, maybe I was just being dumb when I was watching this, but
probably.
Kay is rejecting her. She goes to confront the underground, and there's a moment where she freezes and looks around at everybody, and the music builds up to something terrifying.
Yeah.
And it's like, what's going on here?
It's the underground is turned on her. Like
sure. Okay, that's it? There's nothing more than that? I felt like there was some just revelation like we were supposed to pick
up on. It used to be like, hey, guys, like, right? Like, you know, we're trying to please Kay. And then there was this moment of she realizes that they have their own agenda, which is to keep themselves relevant to Kay's life, keep her dependent on them instead of what Jane is trying to do, which is be like, hey, you know, she needs to grow and kind of learn to do things on her own and maybe won't need us one day.
I think that's spot on, Pete. And I think she always thought that everyone was sort of working together.
Yeah.
And now it turns out she's on the outside. Yeah. I also noticed there was no chainsaw nun. We saw all those faces. Chainsaw Nun is not there. Hashtag, where is Chainsaw Nun?
Exactly.
Do you think Chainsaw Nun got on another show? Like maybe Chicago Fire or something
like
that? Oh,
wait, I'm sorry. You're going to land the role of Chainsaw Nun? And then you're going to be like, sorry, I got another gig?
No, I'm saying Chainsaw Nun got another gig.
She's in Halo.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, that makes
sense. She's working with Master Chief, who's another real person.
I don't understand your reference.
Dude, they're dating. It's sort of an odd romance. Yeah,
power couple. That's great. The only person who can get through Halo Chief is the character. Armor is Chainsaw Nun.
Master Chef. They're a power couple.
You guys just like naming topical things. Is that what's happening?
That's what a podcast is, baby.
My guy. And the other thing I want to say about this storyline is someone stole her bike. Pete, as a man last episode who was like, where's the owner of this bike? Kay's wrong. She stole a bike. Are you on the side of the rest of the underground?
Well, no. First off, how did nobody turn to Kay and be like, oh, you mean the bike you stole?
It could have been the original thing.
But now I'm thinking of someone in the underground who's trying to like keep Kay afraid of the top world and stole the bike.
Maybe it was Chainsaw Nun. Maybe Chainsaw Nun is riding her little life on the bike.
Or maybe she's just happy and just having, you know, the sun in her face and the wind in her hair.
So you only have problems when Kay steals the bike, not Chainsaw Nun.
Well, if it was Chainsaw Nun, I mean, she gets a turn. Anybody else, they gotta die.
She gets a turn on the bike?
Yeah, she gets a turn on the bike.
If you steal something twice, like if you steal something that's stolen, is that good in your estimation? I'm just trying to figure out your moral compass.
I mean, first off, somebody's got to give that bike to the original owner. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The OG.
Well, you believe an eye for an eye makes the whole world happy.
Right.
Right?
Yep.
That's your theory. And I also like you have a parenting
style. Sorry, just to clarify, in Pete's opinion, that means trading eyeballs, right?
Yeah.
You get one of mine, I get one of yours.
I want to try out one of those blue eyes you have. The model of parenting is when someone makes a mistake, you just rub their face in it.
No.
You pee on the floor. What do you do when your cat, which again, you really need to give her a 6 o'clock treat tonight. She's earned it.
Don't worry, I'm on it.
If your cat poops outside the litter box, getting their face rubbed in it?
I mean, that's so far me yelling at the cat has not done a lot, but I'm not giving up.
Steal the cat's bike. See what happens.
Yeah.
Smart.
Let's talk about Cyborg. I was pretty down on the storyline the last episode, but this episode we do move forward pretty significantly. He decides to get human skin.
Wait.
Yes.
Wait, let's back up the truck. The Morse code move was money. I mean, that's not fun.
Backing up the truck. That's in fact moving the truck forward because after he decides to get human skin, he calls Ronnie. Was the next thing I was going
to
say.
You know what, Pete? I don't even know if you know how to drive in relation to this truck that is driving
all
over the place.
I've been in New York City for 21 years, and it's hard to remember. You also don't live in New York City.
Do you know that?
Exactly. I did live in New York City for
21 years, and then you know, like
then
now
you
I'm driving.
Moved to Truck Town, USA, though. So
Truck
no excuses.
Truck Town, USA, baby.
You have a real Jesus take the wheel attitude about driving this truck, Pete, and I don't know where it's going to end up.
You're damn right I got Yosemite Sam on the back of my mud flaps. I mean, come out.
Come out.
What did you think about the Cyborg storyline and Ronnie's return in particular?
Well, I thought it was great. It was this interest. First off, we got this lovely moment where Cyborg got to meet someone who knew his mom. Really nice, touching stuff. The way he kind of talked. Yeah, it was just really a kind of a sweet moment. And then she's like, well, you got to talk to a loved one. And he calls Ronnie. And so yeah. I was moved by that. I was very moved. And I'm happy. I'm not sure about her reasons, but I was happy she was like, yo, what the fuck you doing, Cyborg? You're Cyborg, man. Like, yeah, it sucks, but like, you can't turn back time, man. You're here now. You got a sweet arm cannon. Like, don't take that away.
Well, he was proud of it when he was talking to the doctor, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah.
Since he is talking about getting rid of it all. I mean, if you meet someone you can flirt over Morse code with, you better lock that down.
Exactly,
because,
man.
I've been Morse coding for a long time, and no one's picking up on it.
That's why
Samuel Morse invented it, actually. He wanted to flirt with a girl, and he didn't know how to do it in person.
It's too shy. There's a meet cute right there.
Yeah, right?
Totally. Alex, rom-com, write it up.
Okay, I'll definitely write it. The girl's going to be like, what? What are these? Beeps? Boops?
Beep. It's called a beep cute.
Oh, yeah. Ah, there we go. Should write it, I think. I loved Ronnie's return here to Pete's point when they said Love Lun. I was hoping he was going to call Ronnie. I hope that was going to be the swerve there. But I still feel like we need to see them in a scene together. I honestly don't know what's going on.
Take it easy.
I don't know what's going on. There's got to be something.
On a secret mission, killing people, doing evil shit.
It feels to me like they could only get her for 2 days out of this whole season so far, and that was it.
Don't put real life shit on our kind of thing. All right. I mean, I don't want to don't pull back the curtain. Let's just enjoy the magic of the TV show. Not think
I heard
about that
Ronnie got a role on Chicago Fire with Chainsaw Nun.
Well, I mean, you can't turn that down.
Yeah, they're dating.
Wow. It's a real beep cute.
Like the kind of like Ronnie being like, fucking change your happiness, bro. Like what's important to you? You know?
I'm going to go ahead and disagree with both of you. I didn't like the use of Ronnie here. After all this, it builds up to them having a cell phone conversation where they don't actually connect. And she sort of helps him, but she also seems like disinterested and busy. I was like,
doing
what
exactly was my big question. Yeah. Like, is she taking down Quorum? Is she doing Black Ops again? She's doing Black Ops for whom?
Black Ops! I don't know. She's in the woods. She's in the woods. She could have been doing a watercolor. We don't know.
Wow.
I need more from it, but already in this storyline, I was pleasantly surprised because I think you expect
Wait. So, Justin, you're saying that him reaching out to his true love before he makes the mistake of taking Cyborg away was not a good move?
No, for two reasons. One, she doesn't help him. Goes through with it. He didn't help.
He paused him enough. That conversation stalled him enough. So he
for 5 minutes.
Yeah, it worked. The fog happened and he didn't have the procedure. So
she didn't know about the fog when
the
it was
fuck
happening.
Who cares? She served the purpose. She talked him down enough for him to kind of like delay the procedure until the fog could take care of business.
I'm just saying that she doesn't seem to care about him, and I don't know why this show keeps telling us that they are true love.
Okay, first off, Cyborg is new about this, and yes, she does not seem to care, but maybe she needs somebody to fight for love for a little bit for her. Like, she pushes people away. Maybe somebody who fights for her love will then get it. It's her choice. I'm not trying to say that she doesn't, but maybe Cyborg does some changing, starts fighting for change and what she's into. Maybe the Black Ops stuff, but maybe they can find some common ground, and maybe they can make it work.
Yeah, you know, they met. She took advantage of him to try to get that weird bug juice that then got her. That's not a meet cute. That's she took advantage of him to get something.
Classic story. You make a bet with your friend about dating someone maybe you shouldn't. You step outside of your comfort zone. Next thing you know, you fall in love. Come on, man.
Yeah, you met your girlfriend when she had a Cockney accent and you tried to make her be a real lady, right?
That's right. Yeah.
Didn't work so far, I think.
Yeah. Still her accent is thick.
I do want to get back to the overall storyline, though, because I didn't necessarily mind this, but it was very weird and surprising to me how easy this was. Like, you expect, given Doom Patrol, given the 3 seasons of Doom Patrol, that Cyborg goes to a place to get human skin instead of his robot body. And A, the doctor's going to be weird. B, there's going to be something horrific that happens with his skin. But in this case, she's like friendly. And also she's like, yeah, no problem. We'll just change the code and you'll have skin overnight. All good.
Yeah.
So
I agree. She was oddly nice.
Yes. So I don't think there actually is anything insidious being hidden there, but that in itself as a choice is surprising to me. Pete, you are upset that we are complimenting the storyline?
I just don't understand why you're fighting storyline so hard. You know what I mean? Like, I thought it was a nice moment to have, instead of it being some awkward office talk with the doctor.
Like, you're right, Pete. From now on, none of the three of us will argue about any storylines, including you.
I'm right. Well, not fight this. Pete, you've lost 1,000 fights with the storylines. You're like a boxer who can't win when it comes to fighting storylines.
Or maybe he's just waiting for that one time when he does win.
Nice. Ding, ding, ding. Here we go.
I do think, to get back to speculation about this storyline, though, and where it can go horrible, this is something I've been talking about since, I think, pretty much season one. If they're going to remove Grid and his code, I think we're going to get Grid for the comics, who is sort of like evil cyborg, just sort of this half robot body thing that's going around and attacking everything cyborg loves. So I don't know if that's going to be a season ender or something like that, but I feel like we might see that in some form now.
That feels like a season four thing. Cause I think cyborg's going to be caught up. What do we have? 3 episodes left. This feels like the main thrust of the season at this point, the Sisterhood of Dada, and it's sort of Rita's season. So I feel like that'll be a setup, if anything.
Yeah. Any other moments from the episode that we should call out in particular?
I mean, you know, a lot of people don't talk about how scary fog is, but I think we all learned a valuable lesson in this episode. Mm-hmm. It's scary as fuck. Yeah. You can try to close the chimney. You can try to duct tape doors, but that's just going to get in there. You know?
Another great air. Larry moment, though, where he just walks to the front door.
Yeah,
She's like, what? I've been sealing everything up. All of the frustration from Laura throughout this episode was very fun. Very simple cabra trick of her just walking from one side of the hallway to the other across the cabra, but very enjoyable as well. And just her trying to leap in particular from one side to the other was fun. Good stuff.
I mean, this episode and I guess these last few episodes are sort of like a very theatrical love letters to theater, almost like with that sort of silent film-esque moment with Laura there. Like it's very fun. It's really. Yes.
Oh, there was just one thing while I was looking through my notes I wanted to throw out to you guys. I believe this is Laura says this back in time in 1949 about the Bureau of Normalcy. She says, the big eye in the sky is watching you.
Yeah, right. That was weird.
Do you think that was a reference to the Unmaker from the first season?
How could it not be, right?
Probably. I don't think so, but you never know with this.
One thing I want to call out, though, the big eye in the sky is watching you.
Yeah, I say that all the time.
Mm-hmm. Oh, weird.
CBS. The big eye. We watch
Young
them,
Sheldon.
They watch us.
Always
Young
watching.
Sits in his tower. He's the Sauron of our real world. Wally Sage is in this episode, a character that Laura's interviewing. He can make drawings come to life. He created Flex Mentallo and made him come to life, I think. I read out of the page.
Whoa. Really?
Yeah. Wally Sage is the in continuity, the in DC universe creator of Flex Mentallo. And we see him pull the beach ball out. And I think that's how he made Flex come to life.
That's amazing. Cool. Nice catch, bro.
Yeah. Just doing the research. Because the other thing I noticed last episode, Alex, you said watching with subtitles, you saw the Laura character named something else.
Shipley. Yeah.
Shipley? No, there was another one that
Laura,
you did.
Yes. Should I mention that?
Well, I saw it this time, and I think it's fine to mention. I don't know, because she's sort of evil.
Yeah, Madame Rouge is the name of the character. They've subtitled her as that since the beginning of the season, so they haven't been keeping it secret, and I think they even introduced her as that, but we haven't seen like her be this arch evil villain at any point in the season. So I do wonder if it's just using the character from the comics like they do, sort of like skirting it a little bit, or if we are going to have her go nuts in some way by the final episode. We'll have to see, I guess.
Yeah. It's weird to use her and not have any of that, because she's a character, for those that don't know, who has like a split personality, basically, is good and evil in different times. And that's sort of what it's becoming, it seems like.
Yeah, that seems like that's really her deal.
Though I did love the move at the end here where she is scared, even when she has her memories, that she doesn't want to face up to what Rita is putting down for her. So she finally, after promising it for an entire season, turns into a bird and flies off with this flock of Malcolm Facebird things. So I don't know. I don't know if we're going to see her be evil. I think there's more sympathy for who she is and who everybody is on this show, particularly in this season. So it'll be interesting to see how it all turns out.
Ironically, Rita's the one that's sort of evil for coming up with the great, the eternal flagellation. And I guess in a lot of ways, she's sort of just like Laura. You could almost say there's the
the part where they're kind of like, we kind of see we saw the dude appear wearing that messed up face. And then we got to see in this episode, like, where that came from and how it's like so much sweeter than we originally thought and so much more moving, even if it is at the time of like when an improv troupe is trying to decide if we're going to break up or if we're going to start an evil cult or what it's going to happen.
A lot of cults start as improv groups.
Yeah, I know. I mean, we saw that in this episode of how quickly it can happen.
What do you think about the fact that Malcolm died with that mask on, and so that's how he looked in the afterlife? Is that going to make you be careful, like, what hat you're wearing?
Well,
it's
that thing about, like, you know, if you do that face, your face is going to get stuck like that. I mean, and then you walk around the afterlife. You know?
I got to say, I am shocked, Pete, at you in particular, because the second I saw that mask, I thought you were going to call out Baby Ruth, right? Sloth. Ooh. From Goonies.
Oh, dude, how dare you? That's just...
What?
That's
how
awful.
Dare I what?
That's awful.
What's awful? What are you talking
about?
That
guy was born and beaten into that. It was just...
The character?
Come on, yeah. Chunk,
Sloth?
Chunk was, you know, a tortured person.
Chunk? The big Chunk?
Well, not Chunk, but the Sloth guy.
He seemed pretty happy.
Yeah, he's fine. He says Baby Ruth.
Oh, my God.
Why is this your line?
it was tragic. As soon as he said Sloth, Pete, like, really started crying.
How dare you? Can you not watch Goonies? Do you have a problem with Goonies, Pete?
I love Goonies. One of the greatest movies of all
time.
You're
doing the Truffle Shuffle right now.
How dare you?
How dare you?
The outrage pendulum is swinging wildly as usual. You root for the Fratellis when you watch Goonies, right, Pete?
No. No, come on.
What about in Goonies 2? Did you root for the Fratellis in Goonies 2? The Nintendo game that was impossible?
Impossible to win.
Well, I'm sorry, Pete. On myself, behalf of myself with the fictional character Sloth, I apologize.
Okay, cool.
I love when Sloth and Chunk got together. They're dating.
Oh, it was. it's love at first sight.
Did you hear they got cast on Chicago Fire?
That show is wild. They can do anything.
I don't know what's going on it. I only watch Chicago PD.
Oh, boy.
Before we wrap up here, was most doomed?
Wait. I mean, we got to talk about, like, you know, a lot of people get shocked and can walk away from it. But if you shock a canary in a birdcage, you know what I mean? You're just going to kill that person. That was a sad moment, though, right? I mean, come on.
Yeah. You got to be careful with canaries. They're famously fragile. That's their whole thing.
Yeah.
That's why you bring them into a mine.
That's why you make that, you know, if you give up your heart.
Okay. I always thought you'd bring the canary in the coal mine in case you need a quick snack.
They didn't have lunch boxes back then.
Right.
So you
just have cages full of canaries. You can pick one out.
Hey, what's a wing? Anybody want a canary wing? Very delicate.
Oh, man.
Why don't we talk about who was most doomed this episode? Pete, who was most doomed this
Rita's
episode?
Rita's relationship with Canary Heart was as most doomed in this episode. It was sad to see. It was just one of those things where it's like, you know, we saw him earlier and didn't realize who it was. So it was such a powerful and sweet reveal, especially when they had that moment when the kind of like people were marching down the hallway and Rita was holding hands. It was nice to kind of see her happy in those moments.
Don't you think he might come back in this season?
I don't know. It seemed like he turned into a giant face egg that then released a bunch of face birds onto everybody. So,
well, if you turned into a face bird, Pete, I'd still be friends with you.
Wow. Even though I zapped you into a different realm?
Well, yeah. Is it a cool realm? I guess we'll find out next episode.
Tune in. Cool world.
Yes, oh, exactly. Boy. Whoa, that's a sexual cartoon.
I'm sorry, Justin. Sorry about a reaction a la Sloth to me mentioning cool world.
Hey, how dare you?
Yeah.
How dare you? Don't cool world me. It's the middle of the day, Alex. I have work to do.
Yeah, I have to go back to work after this.
Now I need to be thinking about cool world all day, a combination of humans and cartoons in a very sexy way.
Let me just say, our reference lexicon of cool world, Chicago Fire, My Fair Lady, no one gets this. no one understands what the fuck we're talking about, except for each other. And that's why we truly are the most doomed.
Wow, that's good. I'm going to give it up to Laura this episode. I think I just heard the last episode, too, but she seems in a real bad place again. Everybody is against her. Doom Patrol doesn't want her. And there's a very funny moment where Dane is like, I thought you were going to fucking leave already. Get the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
So they don't want her here. Sister of Donna is basically going to destroy the world or something against her. And she can't face any of those feelings and has turned into a bird and flown away. So very sad. We'll have to see what happens.
But to be more specific, though, I think Cliff is the most doomed in the show because he's spiraling worse than anyone else.
Yeah.
And but even more specifically, I think the most doomed is whoever's riding in this truck that Pete keeps trying to back up.
Because he keeps trying to back it up, but he's going forward and sideways and all over the place.
I think the turning column's dented or something.
If you would like to support this podcast, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Crowdcast on YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about Doom Patrol, iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show at Comic Book Live on Twitter, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast, and many more. And now, a piece of advice from Pete LePage.
Don't kneel to evil people. Happiness or change, bro.
O'Neill. I want this segment to be called A Pete of Advice from Pete LePage.
Oh, that's much better.
I think you're going to say that's it every single time we get to this part of the podcast.
I'll write it down. We'll do it next time.